Look, folks, I hear you. And this is what I'm going to tell you. I can't guarantee it's not going to happen. And no, if anyone tells you they can guarantee it's going to happen, they're looking you in the face and they're lying to you. Okay. And I also am not comfortable telling you that we need to put a whole crisis plan in place for a 5-year-old who is obviously breaking things because there's a communication barrier here. Like she can't communicate and have you understand her, and you can't understand your kid. So here's my question to you. And hold on. And I know that you have a lot to say here and I want to hear you. Put yourselves in the shoes of a person who doesn't have vocal cords and can't express themselves the way you do very easily, right? In the what? 15,000, 20,000 words a day or whatever the number is. I'd have to look it up to be precise, okay? The tons of ways that we express information and share it with other human beings throughout our interactions with them on a 24-hour basis, okay? And you're a little kid and you're already behind the eight ball because you have limited capacity of understanding a reality around you. And on top of that, you've never been able to contact that because you don't have the language to even have a conversation with yourself in your own head. And then put yourself in that position now and then want or need something like the bathroom or a snack or a hug or some form of human touch or interaction, and try to think about what that emotional reaction's like when you can't do that. And you tell me you're going to walk up and look someone in the eye while you break something they like, hoping that they come and interact with you.
I mean, I've never been in that situation, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I would challenge you to walk a mile in her shoes and think about that. And think about this problem not in terms of it being a conduct issue. Because I know the natural response to these kinds of things is that there's a conduct problem here and we need to police conduct. And I get that. I'm a parent. I promise you, my son is level 9,000 mischief. He is Dennis the Menace reincarnated. Okay. So I completely understand now. And he can communicate with me, and he's still a monster sometimes. So I couldn't even imagine the mental gymnastics you have to go through and the zen-like state you have to achieve to maintain your composure in some of these kinds of situations. I get that.
Hey, did you know you can actually earn BACBCUs if you're listening to this episode? If you'd like to learn more, including about our Behavior Analyst Certification Board CEUs, that is Continuing Education Units for people that hold the credentials by the BACB, you can go to explanatoryfiction.com and find this episode. Welcome to Explanatory Fiction. It's very important that you know how this podcast is structured. We've randomly generated this case. The variables are entirely fictional. That's right, because with the power of math and science, you can actually do these things now. In fact, the name Tatiana Carter was randomly generated too. And the episode art, you guessed it, also made by artificial intelligence. But the best part is our team is real and the conversations that ensue are designed as a game that you get to play along with us. In each episode, we have one person that is evaluating the case from a clinical decision-making model, and the others are accomplices of mine who are trying to stump the analyst. Our challenge to you is, can you figure out a possible treatment model before us? Here we go. Tatiana Carter is a 5-year-old girl that lives with her parents in Belleville, Kansas. Belleville is a small town of about 2,000 people where her father and her mother were born and raised. Tatiana is diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder and also has a medical diagnosis of anxiety disorder. Her parents hide her BCBA, but due to their rural location, he is only there on an occasional basis, so their RBT, Darren, works with Tatiana regularly. Darren is halfway through his online master's program of applied behavior analysis and absolutely loves the field and working with Tatiana. Recently, there was an incident where Tatiana engaged in some aggression in the form of throwing some objects, and it's led her parents to seeking an alternative opinion. This is where you come in. You've been scheduled to do an in-home visit during one of her ABA sessions with Darren. On the way there, you tried calling the active BCB on the case right now, Ollie, to just give him a call. And when you rang Ollie, this is what you got, his voicemail.
Hey, this is Ollie McNeil, BCBA. Let's be real. It's 2023 and a lot easier to just shoot a text or email. Oh, if this is a really big emergency, call me 3 times so I know it's urgent.
So, Dimitri, welcome to Belleville, Kansas. As you step out of your car, you're greeted by their dog. Look down at his tag. His name's Toto. Toto leads you to the door as you approach their lovely house. You knock on the door and look at Toto and think to yourself, man, I really am in Kansas right now.
Hello. You must be Dimitri.
Oh, yes, I am. Hi, Isaac. Nice to meet you. Pleasure. How are you doing,
Jay? Nice to meet you, too. Doing all right. How about yourself?
Wonderful. You're great, great. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to getting to know your family and talking about Tatiana.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Ollie said you called, so glad you could make it out.
Yeah, I just wanted to drop him a line and check in. Hopefully we'll touch base with him here today. Okay. Where would be a good place to set up?
How about right over here in the living room?
Okay, lovely. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm Tatiana's mother.
Hi, Bonnie. Pleasure to meet you. Thanks for having
me. You too.
Hey, Dimitri. I'm Darren. I'm the RBT that works with Tatiana.
Hi, Darren. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, man.
Absolutely. So, is Tatiana going to be joining us as well, or?
She's in the other room right now. She's got her iPad, so she's good to go. I mean, if okay. You want her to come in here, she can, but.
Okay, maybe we can get started, and at some point I can maybe kind of go introduce myself and just do a little observation so I can get an idea, a little feel for her directly.
Sounds good.
Okay with you guys. Okay, so let's get started.
Sounds good.
So tell me a little bit about what's the problem? What leads you, because you have Ollie, so tell me a little bit about what leads you to requesting some additional help or support or second opinion.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I can start. I mean, we kind of been talking about her. She's a great kid. We love her a lot. I mean, previously it hasn't been a huge issue, but recently it's gotten like more frequently. She's starting to engage in a lot of like property destruction. She's like ruining a lot of our things.
She just broke my TV.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah, we're pretty unhappy about that.
How old is she? I thought she was little.
She's five.
She's five.
Okay.
Yeah, she's not so, like, she's getting bigger. I mean, it's a concern because she's getting older.
She's strong.
Yeah.
It was one of those rounded TVs. So she just kind of tipped it.
Oh, okay. She's rocking the CRT. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Just like gravity do its thing. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Man,
yeah.
You know, two TVs are making a comeback. Those things are just amazing tools to have in your home.
I mean, I got this one right before the Daytona 500, and she broke it before we could even watch it. So
devastating. I'm so sorry.
It's a pretty sensitive topic in our house.
Yeah. We don't want to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave that alone.
Yeah. She used to really only play with her own things and ruin her own things, but it was fine because she would break it but continue to play with it. So it wasn't a concern for us, but the TV was a big deal. I feel like for us, it just felt really personal. Like, she's never targeted anybody before. She's never targeted like our things, but this one was just, it just felt more personal.
Okay.
She looked me straight in the eye when she knocked the TV over.
Oh, really? Really?
It was rough.
Oh, man, that had to hurt from a five-year-old. You know, I have a 3.5-year-old, and I can tell you he does things to spite me sometimes. So yeah. I can appreciate how deep that knife cuts. So she's engaged in some property destruction. I'm sorry. We said she has a formal diagnosis of also autism, right? Did I miss that? Did you guys mention that already?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think there was some anxiety.
Correct.
Okay. And she's in preschool right now or first grade, going into first grade, kindergarten, first grade? Five.
Kindergarten.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how's she doing? How does she do in school? Do they report seeing this kind of stuff in school?
Yeah, it's at school too. It's pretty consistent.
Okay.
How
frequently does she engage in property destruction?
It's only like 1 to 2 times, maybe per week. Again, it hasn't been a huge issue until recently. I mean, she
this
really
is the first expensive thing she's kind of broke. It's mostly just been kind of making stuff.
Right. And I mean, she would only kind of play with the things right around her and break the things right around her. This was like, she made like a beeline towards the TV. So
when she made the beeline towards the TV, was it specifically in response to anything in particular? Because Isaac, you mentioned that she was looking you in the eyes the whole time. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh at your pain. I just find childlike shenanigans hilarious.
I mean, it's really hard to tell with her. She doesn't talk much. She really just, you can kind of tell by the,
I'm sorry. I mean more like Did you just tell her no, that she couldn't have, that she wants something she was going for? You had to say it, take it away from her. She, I don't know, it's bath time and she's running away. Is there some kind of a thing that was going on and she couldn't, like, maybe she was asking for a show she likes and you said no because it was Daytona 500 time? Like, what? I'm trying to get a feel for, like, exactly what was going on before. Because or did it just come out of nowhere?
She clearly wanted something.
Like it came out of nowhere?
But I had no idea what.
Okay. So it was a response.
She was leading me.
Yeah. It's hard to.
She was leading me around.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bonnie. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. It's hard to figure out what she wants. I mean, she doesn't communicate with us. So that's hard to figure out.
Okay. All right. Well, other than the property destruction, is there any other significant problem that you're dealing with that you're hoping to that needs to be addressed or needs to we need to talk about?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. She's using a PEX book for with Darren currently. I don't think it's doing anything, and she just seems to get frustrated over it, honestly.
Okay, so she has a PEX book. Darren, does she actually communicate? What icons and just what have you guys been teaching her? What words has she been learning to use with her PEX?
Oh, well, she actually has like a whole binder of icons. We've basically made something for everything in the house so that she can tell us what she needs, because that's beautiful. When she gets very upset. Thorough. Yeah. So
here's my question, Darren. That's sure. Great that you guys have such a comprehensive lexicon for her. The question that I was going to ask, though, is that, like, have you guys taught her each item individually, or did you guys just give her a bunch of stuff she could pick from?
Well, yeah, we're not there yet where we're really picking which one and holding her to which icon it is. She's in phase one right now for PEX.
So you said she's been in PEX one, which is pick up, reach, and release, which I'm assuming she has those particular motor skills. So what I'm asking is, have you guys been able to, like, how long have you been in PEX 1?
Well, Ollie sent along some of the PEX to us in like a binder, and we've been practicing it, and I'm in a program. I know you're a BCBA. I'm working my way towards that as well. So I'm in a program right now. We're working in verbal behavior. So I'm picking up on kind of what his goal was with sending those. And that's where kind of this whole binder came from, as we started looking around the house and I started building up, because there wasn't very much in there that he gave us. He just kind of, he sent us that binder, which is great. And, you know, we're Bonnie and Isaac are using it when she's upset. So we're really prompting her, and we're still on those.
Well, since we know about verbal behavior, Darren, let me ask you, what receptive and expressive labels has she mastered, or she demonstrate the ability to novelly respond to or use?
I'm getting up to that part. We're talking about manding right now, and I'm trying to apply it to this case. So we know that when she needs things and she's pointing, we're going to like prompt and bring her hand down to an icon. And then when she hands us the icon, she's requesting, so we can, so we're manding right now, but it does require prompting.
Okay, Darren. So I'm sorry. I think I just need some clarification.
Yeah, sure.
You said that you haven't done any receptive or expressive labels. You're working on manding, and you guys have a big book of icons that she's currently in PEX phase one with. Is that correct? Am I understanding all that correctly?
Yeah. So when I talked with Ollie about it, it was really just like, it doesn't matter which one she points to right now. It's just about having her hand something over before she gets whatever she's gesturing towards or bringing us towards or whatever she wants. So you can kind of tell what she wants. So when that happens, we're bringing the book over and we're grabbing her hand and we're helping her get to the icon. Then we're putting it into my other hand. And then we can go and give her the things.
So she is picking up the icon. She is reaching out with it. She is releasing it to you, and you're giving her something. She can do that independently.
Well, no, with prompts. She's still in physical and sometimes some partial physical prompts with it, but it's not independent.
Yet. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to put a pin in that and come back to that, Darren. Thank you for that information.
Yeah, sure.
So, Bonnie, Isaac, and actually, Darren, if you do have some feedback, I'd love to hear it. I think I have an idea of where we're going here, but I want to just be thorough. So I'm just going to run you through a quick just list of questions. We cover diagnoses. Any medications involved here?
Nope.
No medications. She is active in school. Any history of trauma?
Nope.
Or anything I need to know about? No. Okay. Is Ollie going to be joining us at some point here? Or am I going to have an opportunity to have a conversation with Ollie? Because I want to make sure I get a full picture of what the goal of the program is, because I don't want to undermine a colleague or contradict them in any way necessarily without knowing exactly what their intention was.
Yeah, I can give him a call real quick.
Great. That'd be wonderful. All right. I'd love to hear his point of view real quick before I get started.
Hey, this is Ollie McNeil, BCBA. Let's be real. It's 2023 and a lot easier to just shoot a text or email. Oh, if this is a really big emergency, call me 3 times so I know it's urgent.
I guess Ollie's not available right now. Sorry.
Okay. We have a lot to talk about. I have an idea of what's going on here. At least I have some suggestions just out of the gate. And I'm sure there's a lot more going on with the case that I might not quite understand. But just in thinking about what we're doing with this PEX book, the frequency at which the behavior's happening, kind of how it's happening, and just everything around that. I think we need to talk about communication, and I think we need to talk about the way that we're teaching our communication. And I think we need to go back to the drawing board a little bit on that and refine that and really focus on these things. So if that works for you guys, I'd like to start there.
I mean, we haven't really seen any progress with this PEX book. I am frankly over it.
I hear you.
Most of the time I know what she wants, so I don't really.
Yeah.
There was the one TV incident, but other than that, she's pretty good about leading me to what she wants. And I mean, I think any day now she's going to start talking. So.
Well, my only, I don't want to interrupt you, Isaac, but it's the best thing she has for her voice right now. And I'm really hesitant to talk about taking away the only way that she really has a voice or can communicate.
Yeah. And here's what I'm going to say, actually. Also, if vocal speech is going to emerge in non-vocal learners, usually having an additional augmentative device or alternative speech process for them to begin the communication process, that actually helps stimulate that if it's going to happen. So if we want to maximize the possibility of that happening, given where she currently is, you give yourself the best shot of seeing that happen if she has a way to already express herself and communicate, because it's all about lowering the effort. You know, the one thing that people don't realize or don't think about is, you know, communication, the way that we talk vocally, is incredibly low effort. We just move our lips and our vocal cords shift and vibrate, and we produce mouth sounds. And if the capacity for that is there for a person, if you give them a higher effort way to do that and they start seeing that value back and forth, they'll start defaulting to the lowest effort version of it. So you actually increase the likelihood of vocal speech emerging if she's physiologically capable of it. We won't know that until we see it. I'm not saying that she's not. I'm just saying, since we're not seeing it, let's set her up for success and let's get information flowing back and forth in a way where she can start contacting and accessing the world and you guys. And I will say this other thing, Isaac. I think, and this is not to criticize a fellow professional, I think the failure of the program.
Do you know my profession?
Not you, you heard of me? Ollie. What is it that you do?
Oh, I'm actually the back-to-back-to-back champion of the Sprint Car Series down at the Bellevue High Banks. Do you have something against my profession?
No, it's fantastic. With that being said, I was actually referring to Ollie as a behavior analyst. And I'm going to say that, you know, we're just not quite right on the way that we're delivering the whole program and stuff. So I'm going to sit down with Darren here. We're going to retool things a little bit because, like, for example, PEX phase one, we should be moving that through that a lot faster. Secondly, we should be also simultaneously working on just building her capacity to identify objects, effectively common ones and stuff like that in the environment. And then we should be moving into PEX phase 2 and 3 pretty quickly so that we can start working on discriminating between objects and items. And so that she can start articulating exactly what she wants the way that she wants it. And you can start getting information from her. I mean, that should have happened, honestly, within a day or two. We should already be in it's called PEX phase 3, actually, which would be discriminating between, you know, preferred and non-preferred items for A, and then preferred and preferred items B. But anyway, that doesn't matter. That's the technical aspects of the program that don't matter to you guys. What matters is that we need to retool the speed at which we're moving through these phases, and some of the additional supplementary programs that we need to be working on to be building her language skills so that she can have, again, a lexicon or some kind of language that she can fall back on, or at least we know that she has an understanding of certain objects in the environment and can identify them, and then teach a corresponding icon to those things, and then build in the process for communicating whether or not she wants or needs or that thing as a discussion piece. So my recommendation is we just go back and retool this thing and just restart over. And I know that you're not too hot on that, but I can assure you that if we go back and do this the right way, we take our time, I think you'll start seeing slow and slow emergence where this becomes more useful. Because the big problem here is that, and I get it, it's not been useful for you. Let's make it useful. And let's make it useful for her too. Let's actually make it functional. Makes sense.
Yeah, no, I just want to make sure she has a voice and that she's able to advocate for herself. So I just know behavior change is slow, and we were kind of pushing through. So
sure, and this is one of those things where there's slow and then there's glacial, and I think we need to speed things up a little bit. So we'll do that.
When do you think she'll be talking?
I'm sorry?
When do you think she'll start talking?
There's no way for me to tell you that answer. I wish I could. I can tell you that she will be communicating with you in a way that you'll understand what she wants and needs pretty fast, in terms of whether or not she'll be using her like vocal cords to express those things to you. I mean, if I could tell you that answer, I wouldn't be in Kansas talking to you right now. I'd be cruising the streets in my Lambo. So
do you think like a couple weeks, a couple months?
I would never be so presumptuous as speculated to an answer for that for you. So there's no way.
Okay,
because I can just tell you I can tell you this. I can give you probabilities. I can tell you that if she's capable of it, if it's possible, if her vocal cords work in that way where she can create speech, this increases the chances that she'll be using those vocal cords to communicate to you versus not. I cannot tell you what the timeline. I can't tell you what percentage it increases it. I can't tell you any of those things. That would be me lying to you or just giving you false hope in terms of like what reality is. But I can just tell you that it does make it more likely if it's possible.
Listen, feel like, of course, we want her to be able to talk, but I feel like I'm very concerned about her escalating and just getting worse and worse. I mean, we have a lot of valuable things around our home, and I feel like it's just like this ticking time bomb of like, we're going to push her too hard and she's going to break something like valuable. And it feels like anytime she's even out of her room, I mean, her room is Tatiana proofed. I mean, like, we keep it free of things that are meaningful to us. But now anytime she's out of her room, I feel like we're nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, and I feel like we're losing sight of why we called you in. I mean, it's really the property destruction that's been an issue. She's been going into my trophy room. And I mean, if she knocks one of those over as a back-to-back-to-back champion of sprint cars, I already have enough trouble dealing with this stuff after the TV incident. I mean, if she broke a trophy, man.
Look, folks, I hear you. And this is what I'm going to tell you. I can't guarantee it's not going to happen. And no, if anyone tells you they can guarantee it's going to happen, they're looking you in the face and they're lying to you. Okay. And I also am not comfortable telling you that we need to put a whole crisis plan in place for a 5-year-old who is obviously breaking things because there's a communication barrier here. Like she can't communicate and have you understand her, and you can't understand your kid. So here's my question to you. And hold on. And I know that you have a lot to say here and I want to hear you. Put yourselves in the shoes of a person who doesn't have vocal cords and can't express themselves the way you do very easily, right? In the what? 15,000, 20,000 words a day or whatever the number is. I'd have to look it up to be precise, okay? The tons of ways that we express information and share it with other human beings throughout our interactions with them on a 24-hour basis. Okay? And you're a little kid and you're already behind the eight ball because you have limited capacity of understanding your reality around you. And on top of that, you've never been able to contact that because you don't have the language to even have a conversation with yourself in your own head. And then put yourself in that position now and then want or need something like the bathroom or a snack or a hug or some form of human touch or interaction, and try to think about what that emotional reaction's like when you can't do that. And you tell me if you're going to walk up and look someone in the eye while you break something they like, hoping that they come and interact with you.
I mean, I've never been in that situation, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I would challenge you to walk a mile in her shoes and think about that. And think about this problem not in terms of it being a conduct issue. Because I know the natural response to these kinds of things is that there's a conduct problem here and we need to police conduct. And I get that. I'm a parent. I promise you, my son is level 9,000 mischief. He is Dennis the Menace reincarnated. Okay. So I completely understand now. And he can communicate with me, and he's still a monster sometimes. So I couldn't even imagine the mental gymnastics you have to go through and the zen-like state you have to achieve to maintain your composure in some of these kinds of situations. I get that. But what I would say is, instead of looking at this as the conduct problem, which is obvious from an outsider's view, look at it as the expression of skills that she doesn't have that she needs to learn to be able to be a functioning person and member of your family. And if we look at it from that angle, then it's a matter of giving her the tools and the skills for her to be able to effectively participate in that way. So then the question becomes, if that's the point of view we want to take, what are the tools and skills that we need to equip her with? Well, I think the PEX book was a good start as an idea, but frankly, it was a horrendous execution. It could be better. I'm sorry. That's me downplaying exactly how terrible the execution was. It was executed absolutely atrociously and frankly, incorrectly.
Well,
so
I mean,
we need to, and Darren, that's not a knock on you. Knock on anybody. I'm sure it's just a matter of knowledge base. But the reality of the situation is, if we want to teach these things, there's a sequence, there's a rate, there's a speed, there's a prompting process, there's additional ancillary language building that needs to be going on, and there's particular rates that things need to be going on, not hopes and prayers and thoughts and prayers. So I want to retool this. Tell you what, I'll make you a deal. Give me 2 weeks to sit down, retool this program and implement it. And in 2 weeks, if we haven't seen some improvement in terms of her ability to actually effectively communicate some semblance of a want and need, then you're more than welcome to revisit this and choose to go down a disciplinary route, in which case that's a decision you can make it apparent, and I won't force your hand in that regard. But I just need a couple weeks. Maybe I just need a couple weeks to retool this to kind of show you a little proof of concept here. How's that? Does that seem, can I get you to at least agree to that?
You sound a lot like Ollie right now. I'm not going to lie. You can do what you got to do, but I'm not really going to be doing this PEX thing anymore.
That's fine. That's your prerogative.
I'm happy to learn it and see it.
Bonnie, work. Darren, I appreciate your input. That's great. Bonnie, would you be willing to participate in this process?
Personally, whatever Darren feels is best. I mean, he really gets Tatiana. Like, he is so good with her that if he believes that's best, then I believe that's best.
Oh, wonderful. Then Darren, are we on the same page?
Yeah, no, I want to see PEX work, man. I love the system and, great. And you know,
yeah. I think this will be an opportunity for you as a student for us to sit down and really talk about what does the procedure look like? What is the speed at which you're supposed to move through it? How do you effectively prompt it? What is the sequencing of these skills and the scope of it? And additionally, what are the ancillary components that should be teaching along with it, rather than just giving someone an ocean of pictures and hoping they figure it out? So We'll work on that then. So Bonnie, you're with Darren. Darren, you're with Bonnie. Let's go. Isaac, I totally get it, man. Here's what I would tell you then. Just one thing. Do yourself a favor then. I would lock up those really special trophies because I understand they're irreplaceable, precious objects to you. And we can't guarantee as we're going through this process that we can necessarily protect them. And I'd hate to have that happen to you while we're going through this learning process.
I can do that.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you all for your time. And Darren, let's touch base here and work it out.
That sounds great.
Stupendous.
The next day, Dimitri, as you're hanging out, you get a phone call. You don't answer it because it's not a number that you recognize, and you get a voicemail.
Man, I don't know how they do it back there in Columbus, Ohio, but you cost me my case, man. I've been working with this family since T was 3 years old and first diagnosed. I've got 20 other clients to worry about, and she lives over 3 hours out. You think you can just come in and wave a magic wand to get her to communicate with her pecs? Good luck. I'm going to be going through the ethics code to see what ethics code you just violated because this is messed up.
You made it. This is the point in which you can pause. Think about what you maybe would have done differently. Think of if there's any themes throughout this as well. We're going to break character here and this just turns into a typical podcast where it's just an open discussion. I hope you enjoy.
I love that we called Holly twice.
We couldn't have planned that in.
Max, that was a good note to cue it up again.
So the random dice roll led us down to rules and all this sort of stuff. It turns out that Belleville, Kansas is home of the fastest dirt track. So just so you know, the annual prize for winning that race is $50,000, dude. Like, he's supporting his family. Real. Yeah, he's supporting his family. He's supporting his family.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. No, we didn't give you that detail, and listeners probably didn't Google it, I'm assuming, either. Wow. But, yeah, the intention here, we can figure out where we go, but the intention was just, like, it's a rural aspect. Yeah, back to back. It's a rural aspect. The BCBA is there, you know, once every few weeks or a month, bare minimum. And you got an overly ambitious RBT. That means well, but... it's kind of steering things under in some weird ways.
That reminds me of this old Ali G interview. You guys know who Ali G is?
I know, yeah. Ali G.
Sacha Baron Cohen. Where he goes, he was interviewing Boutros Ghali, who at the time was the president of the United Nations. And the guy's name is Boutros Ghali. So his first name's twice. But he hit it with the triplet. He's like, I'm sitting here with my man, Boutros Ghali.
back to back
champ.
Repeat.
Oh my god, you're ridiculous, dude. Where do we even start with this? Where do you guys want to start?
I think a theme that I want to definitely hit on is just kind of pecs. Another theme that might be interesting is what do you do when you run into a family that has not great BCBA. Maybe let's start there.
Oh man, what to do when a family has a not so great BCBA? Oh man, I don't. It's hard for me to answer that question because I don't want to be mean. But I mean, it comes to the point where you can't.
You weren't being mean by just asking questions, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, that's what you kind of do. You got to just ask the obvious questions and let people come to their own conclusions. Just because you don't want to directly attack somebody or directly insult them or call them a moron or whatever, or incompetent, even though you feel the need to do that at times, at least I know I do. In this kind of a situation, it's more like you have, in my opinion, you have a moral and ethical obligation to say something because it's literally the interventions that they've designed, which they're not effectively monitoring and not effectively training people to implement correctly, are actually leading to an increase in problem behavior. So it's like, it's having the opposite effect of that it was intended, number one. And number two, it's being taught in such a way where it's turning the family against a functional communication opportunity that this person's probably going to need. Because let's be honest, even though I'm sure it's possible that vocal language will emerge, it's not necessarily likely in these kinds of situations. And while you always hope and maintain a degree of optimism, you know, you got to plan for the worst and, you know, be happy with the best. So in terms of the bad BCBA thing, I mean, I would feel zero guilt about it. That phone message at the end, I probably would have called back and made that person feel very small, but that's just because I'm petty.
No, you wouldn't know if you would have gotten his voicemail. Fair enough.
That's true. Fair enough. That's true. I would have never left.
Unless he called three times.
I would have never left a voicemail. But I mean, aside that, the funny part of it, like, it was a terrible program. I mean, they weren't teaching anything. What were they teaching? You know,
use of hand over hand prompting.
Well, yeah. PEX is one of those things that like everybody, I don't actually hear a lot of people talk about PEX anymore because tablets and stuff are so common now, and so widely available that you mostly hear people talking about the digital ones like Proloquo or LAMP and stuff.
We usually start out with PEX and then we'll transition over to something electronic.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of thing where like it depends if a speech path is involved or not. Usually I'll let if there's a speech path involved, I just default to them in terms of selecting the modality. Cause again, we're behavior analysts. It's all stimuli to me. All the modality does is alter the way that I'll present the stimuli as I'm going through the process of teaching them how to use it. But just in terms of like PEX as its own thing, PEX is a brand. I think it's important for us to like lay this out. PEX is a brand, picture exchange communication system. Even though it sounds like a broad category of thing, it's a brand that is trademarked. It's a specific process with six phases that's detailed by that company. Personally, I've only really used PEX 1 through 4. I mean, in very rare occasions have I gone through 5 and 6. 5 and 6, I think, is like, it's when you start. So it starts out. So phase 1 is pickup, reach, and release. The function of that aspect of it is just to teach the exchange of an icon means access and communicate. It means it's a signal and a receiver moment, right? It's like a listener and speaker opportunity. So it's not actually content is irrelevant. So he was actually right in that he was saying that in that pace, PEX phase 1, the content didn't matter. What he was wrong about is that the function of it is for the pickup, the reach, and the release. Once the person acquires that aspect of it, you move on. And if you're not getting pickup, reach, and release within like a couple hours or a couple, sessions or trials, it's time to start really honing in on that and whether or not they have the fine and gross motor to be able to do that and teaching to those skills and then paring it down from there. PEX phase 2 is distance and persistence. So that's teaching someone how to travel with an icon, travel to the book, and or pursue a person to get the thing that they want, persist towards their communication. And that involves like strategically placing the book around and building up that distance to it and having them go to it, get the icon come to you. So you triangulate that kind of thing. And then PEX phase 3 is broken down into 2 sections, 3A and 3B. 3A, you start with preferred versus unpreferred items. And this is when you start teaching discrimination. And that's why I was asking about receptive and expressive labels. In this case, you wouldn't have expressive labels necessarily because she's non-vocal, so they would just be receptive labels. But if you have adequate number of receptive labels, you at least have a lexicon that you can fall back on. And then you could also teach her preferred items as receptive labels and starting using those. And then the idea is you start building a conditional discrimination between preferred and unpreferred items. And you start with preferred versus unpreferred because that's a clear, obvious discrimination that a person can start making, and you can actually start enticing them with the thing itself. And that's when content starts to matter in the context of PEX. There's a couple different prompting strategies you can use. PEX has their own little prompting strategy with a correction procedure, but realistically speaking, as behavior analysts, I mean, really anything that works there, use a progressive prompt delay, errorless procedure, whatever that makes sense. 3B is when you start really honing in on those discriminations, and that's where you start targeting preferred versus preferred items. So you start actually teaching much more discrete conditional discriminations. And then PEX 4 is where you start including a sentence strip and you start including additional icons like I want. And again, five and six, I've actually, that's not true. I've done five and six one time with one learner who had very sophisticated cognitive capacity, though he was non-vocal. And that's when you start talking about adjectives and nouns and additional like pronouns, like just building more complex sentence structures in the context of the icons themselves. But for most kids with autism, if you're going to be teaching through a PEC system, one through four is adequate before you start transitioning to a much more sophisticated or parsimonious way, like a digital system, or really just enough for them to be able to communicate their wants and needs.
I find that it's a good program to point towards or at least the use of icons to some extent, especially because those speech and language devices can be expensive and they can be thrown. And when property destruction is within the repertoire of an individual, it's pretty easy to get rid of a device by adequately throwing it, or it might not be around as much if people are not consistently making sure that that's a priority.
Awesome exception to the rule of digital versus analog, right? That's a great, when is analog actually superior to digital? And that's in a situation where high frequency of property destruction or likelihood of attempting to escape the demand to communicate. You can't blow up a piece of paper and it's really easily replaced.
Despite your best efforts sometimes. Despite, yeah,
exactly. Where it's pretty easy to break a circuit board. So that's a great, great exception there, Dave.
Another significant portion of that is when individuals do have some emerging vocal verbal behavior, so much of the way that we teach to that is echoics and prompting or offering what do you want as an opening to have them express that. But one offering is a little bit of a challenge because you're not teaching that spontaneous communication portion. Or if you're saying, what do you want? Goldfish, you're... It's hard to fade verbal prompts. It's incredibly hard to fade those. So if we're teaching, we can have a much more clear fading system within our prompts if we're able to stray away from those initial verbal, especially if we can just tack on that verbal piece once that fluency builds of actually exchanging and identifying via the icons.
I think that the point around how it facilitates echoics is probably the best point. You're absolutely right. I mean, if we're talking about where do you start seeing massive opportunity for that person to express themselves vocally, if they are going to express themselves vocally, is through repetition and opportunities to engage in codes. It's really smart. Good stuff there, buddy.
One of the themes here is just what it might be like in the rurals as well.
They're in a rural area and the BCBA is not there all the time, blah blah blah. But I mean, like, my know, thing with that quick, is that there's no excuse know, for bad practice.
There's a specific town in Nevada where like behavior analysts have to drive to be able to provide services. Like, there's no behavior analysts in those sort of areas, and so you end up getting these patterns of once a week, once every 2 weeks, whatever it may be, where you really are like relying on that RBT, and that RBT is even out of a really small sample size, right? Sure. So I don't know where you're going with this, but like, there is some pretty messy rural services out there.
Oh, hey, listen, I service rural communities. I work in a rural community. I service a rural community in my, not just in my day job, but in my private practice as well. And I mean, like, yeah, the services are sparse and they're starving for anyone to be out there to help them. And I totally agree with that. I get it that sometimes something is better than nothing, right? But when that something is better than nothing kind of credo falls apart is when that something is making the problem worse or creating problems that weren't already there. And that's what was happening in this situation, right? We were seeing a slow buildup of escalation of property destruction, you know, and it was happening across environments, and it was starting to obviously have a clear-cut social component. I mean, the dad in the scenario was literally saying, she looks me in the eye while she does it. Like, I just imagine like a spiteful meme of like a cat, you know, walking up along the ledge.
Yeah, correct.
Like, what are you doing? You're looking at you right in the eyes and doing it.
Oh, this trophy?
This is the one you love?
Your first trophy from the back to back to back?
So, you know, in that case, something isn't better than nothing. Nothing is probably better. And since they had, in this scenario, they would have had someone come in as an alternative. And they have Darren, who's enthusiastic and willing to learn. That's honestly the biggest, the most disappointing part of that guy's performance, if it would have been a real life situation, is that you should never waste an enthusiastic RBT. Even if they're annoying and they want to know everything right now and they're not willing to, and they're like having difficulty just letting things come to them a little bit. I mean, you, nothing replaces an enthusiastic person that's willing to put the work in.
That's a precious situation that is totally missing.
Treat that as a the gift that it is and respect it.
Do you think Darren also got the voicemail of Ollie every time he called?
I guarantee that part of this was just Darren trying to fix stuff that he wasn't qualified to fix and do things that he didn't realize he needed to be doing, and was trying to loosely apply things in his program. And I'm going to guess if he's rural and he's working, it's an online program. And again, I'm going to say this as a, I'm a product of an online program. So I'm not, I got the bona fides to criticize this thing. And that, like, especially as we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years, the explosion of online programs, we've seen a significant decline in the quality of performance. And if everyone's looking for a data point for that, all they have to look at is the decreasing trend line and pass rates relative to the increasing availability of approved course sequences to see an inverse relationship to the availability of those things as a clear data indicator.
I think Darren was going to be ready to jump in there too, depending if you tried to swing him against Ollie of bringing up, well, I'm entering the second half of my program and I'm going to be doing a practicum, but I need an on-site supervisor. So it's, what are my options? Are you going to supervise me, man? Like, I'm going to need to get my hours. I'm spending all this money for this degree, and I'm not going to be able to sit for the exam if I'm not being supervised. Or if
that's a super practical thing that happens. I mean, I don't know if you guys had that happen to you, where it's like people are like, if I can get my supervision hours, I'm out. I mean, that makes sense. I hear that. I mean, but again, if you're in a rural situation, because I mean, I do some online supervision for actually a couple people who are in rural situations. And this is not to sound like exploitative here, but it's going to be sound exploitative. Is that like just as they, much as they've got you between a rock and a hard place, you've got them. Because unless they're willing to relocate themselves also, then they got a fish in the pond that they're in too. And the opportunities become limiting over time for everyone. You can't, they're not going to be able to do that too much. So it's really about being able to set them up for success, make sure they acquire the skills and go from there.
What do you think is like the tipping point where you decide I'm doing more harm than I am if I just refuse to see this client who desperately needs services?
Man, that's a really tough question.
Because I feel like that's the tricky position, is that you want to take people on because you know what I mean? Like, they need help. Yeah. But also, at what point do you say it's better for you to get nothing than for you to get something that makes it worse?
I mean, that's, to me, that's a self-awareness question for the person doing it. Yeah. And that's definitely a problem that I've seen amongst practitioners and what we do, that especially behavior analysts. But honestly, helping professionals in general, this is, social workers really have this problem. Like, counselors have this problem big time. Like, a lot, like, so it's not just BCBAs that have this problem. This is just helping professionals in general, where like they think just because they're involved, they're improving the situation, even though it's way outside of their scope and skill set. And that's a self-awareness piece. Is the only, you have to self-police that, unless the thing that you're doing is going to rise to an ethical or legal problem. No one's really going to call you on it, because when it's all said and done, these people don't know that you're shitty at your job.
Yep.
So it's really about how committed are you at being responsible, and how committed are you at actually providing services that you know how to deliver. So to answer your question, I mean, the threshold is it in your scope or is it not? Do you know how to do what you're talking about? Do you have experience, or at least a working knowledge of this kind of a situation categorically? Do you have access to colleagues and peers who, if you don't necessarily know exactly what to do. You can tap into to kind of guide you from behind the scenes. Are you going to be self-aware enough to know that if you don't know this stuff and you're going to take on the challenge, it's learning time, and you have to take on the humility of a student in these kinds of situations and not the audacity and braggadocio of the expert that most that most commonly happens in these situations where you see people get into a room and they speak definitively about stuff like they know what they're talking about. I mean, Darren in the example, I cut him off a couple times just because it just so happens today I wasn't in the mood to just let someone finish. But I mean, like in a normal situation, Darren would have been allowed to just rattle on for another 15, 20 minutes about all this.
Oh, and he would have. Don't you worry about that. Oh, I
sense it in him. That's why I was like, we're not doing that today.
Darren didn't even get to all his talking points.
I know.
He didn't.
We cut that off with the quickness. Had he been able to do that, he would have just prattled off a bunch of nonsense. And then the question then becomes is like, at what point in time or what capacity do you have and what ability do you have and willingness to confront just errors and just wrong things? I mean, just wrong statements. I mean, because when it boils down to it, and this kind of gets back to some of the other stuff that we've talked about in terms of the science, like, there's right and wrong answers to some of this stuff. Like, there's a lot of gray, and we paint within these lines of gray. But I mean, like, there's a right answer. There's a perfect answer, and then you have to whittle down from the perfect answer to make it adjust your situation. But if you don't know the perfect answer to start with, then you're shouldn't be doing what you're doing.
Well, in this case, that's something that Bonnie can identify potentially, right? Or Isaac. And so Darren's spewing off knowledge, air quotes.
Right.
Can actually make the problem way worse, right?
Yeah.
That self-awareness piece is so important.
Dude, self-awareness
is like...
Stay within
your scope, RBTs.
I mean, it's not just RBTs, though. It's BCBAs too, man.
It's everyone, yeah.
How many BCBAs just like get bored with working with kids with DD or autism and they want to take on some mental health cases? But they don't have the skills to conceptualize that stuff. So they start talking about basic verbal operants and like Skinnerian verbal behavior when we're talking about like psychotic features or bipolar stuff. And it's like, hold on a second. You can't look at the world in this bizarro listener speaker conceptual framework when we're talking about these super complex social behaviors. Like, you have to be able to adjust your framework, translate it in behavior analytic terms, but not necessarily be married to it without having to go into a tap dance or labyrinth of language to really articulate what you have to say. So like the self-awareness piece goes from the top to the bottom. And again, instead of that learning curve, man, like generalists win, right? So like, if you want to be a generalist, be a generalist. But when you're adding to your skill set to generalize those skills, you have to recognize that your training, your education, most likely your practical work is ages 2 to 7, 2 to 12, kids with autism working on a VB map or an ABLES or in a special ed classroom. And you gotta learn. You got a lot to learn.
I was just trying to point out the well-intentioned RBT spouting knowledge to parents. I mean, the parents see the RBT 10 times more than they see the BCBA. They build a bit more rapport than they may be able to with the BCBA from time constraints. And it's a slippery slope when the RBT thinks that they know the programming side of things.
Now that you're the big boss man, Max. What's your policy on RBTs communicating with parents?
It's when you pick them up out of the car, give them a quick update of the day, but tell them things that are specifically outlined in their programming and how they performed. But outside of that, it's going to be a minus on their performance evaluation.
I mean, actually, you know what, Abby, you work in a classroom. You got a pair, right?
No, I'm not in a special ed classroom. I'm in a gen ed class.
Oh, gen ed. Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's different.
Dude, yeah, that's totally different. Never mind.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's even, so you don't actually deal with that. Wow. So you actually don't deal with, you escaped this stuff. You went and became a BCBA and just escaped.
Yeah. No, I was like, I think it's a little bit better to be with these gen ed kids and typical parents.
But I mean, with gen ed kids, though, well, hold on. This is actually interesting in terms of understanding scope. So like you work with gen ed kids, this means they'll have typical IQs. They're all
yes.
on or really mm-hmm. close to grade level.
Yeah. Yep.
If they got, you know, adolescent problems and angst, you know, maybe some mental health occasionally, depression, you know, like the normal teenagery stuff, whatever that stuff yeah. brings. And realistically, your training was autism and autism adjacent.
Well, luckily, no, because it was the CABIS program. So I was in a gen ed classroom for my master's.
Okay. Got it.
But I mean, I definitely have a background in that. I mean, that's
okay.
probably more comfortable.
Okay. Right on. Well, I stand corrected. Yeah. And I'm sorry. I made assumptions about your background.
No, honestly, because even if I try to look into more typical BCBA work, that is definitely a position where I'm like, I mean, of course I know about PECs. Of course I've seen it. But could I fluently talk about the levels and make advice? Absolutely not. I would definitely have to be like consulting and researching and reading. So
that's good. Yeah,
I definitely agree.
The Morningside model of generative instruction or something like that, CABIS, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's really interesting how like different programs just have entirely different breeds of behavior analysts.
Yeah.
Right? There's not too many of them out there, like you're saying, but like there are some that create some very different skill sets.
I mean, PTers are like people who work with typical kids. I mean, that is definitely a massive minority in skill sets. Like you are the exception, not even close to the rule.
No.
So that's...
Well, there's a barrier of entry sometime for those kids or those families as well. It's like, hey, we're going to do skill recovery or we're going to enhance your discrimination fluency skills for neurotypical kids that are showing up for practice sessions and they just happen to be graphing on acceleration charts or they're using PT methods. Like it, I'm sure there's a market for it. I mean, in some of our wealthier communities around here, I know that those kinds of centers are popping up.
Model of it. Yeah, yes. Fit Learning is, they're crushing life. Oh man, yeah. There's the problem with the situation is there's so many. It's really hard to find the bright side of this kind of a situation. So I wish we could talk about more aspirational pieces of it. But we were literally laughing the whole time because like every piece of it. I mean, honestly, I was laughing because it hits home so hard. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's a cathartic component for us here. Go ahead,
Adam. You gotta laugh to stop from crying. <I know.
laughs> I think one part that was fairly unique was how involved the parents were. I mean, I don't think, I mean, maybe that's just my classroom Bonnie specifically, was. But that's true. Isaac was there.
Isaac's just dreaming he of that was... dirt track, babe.
He's going for that back to back to back to back.
Yeah. Dude, 50K for the grand prize. That's some good cash in rurals, man.
He's keeping on and turning left all the way to that paycheck. I'll tell you what.
You go fast and turn to the left.
But yeah, I don't really have a lot more to add for this one. It's just, I mean, yeah, it's a lesson in how do you talk to a person who isn't good at their job. That's a really difficult thing to do. And there's a million different ways to go about it. It's a lesson in, you know, learning about verbal behavior versus executing on it. That's a big takeaway in this. And I have to say, like, that is an area where in the one term I was willing to suffer adjuncting and teaching verbal behavior, I can say that learning conceptually and intellectually what a verbal operant is and understanding how it exists in real life between two human beings exchanging information is a totally different animal. And understanding how all these things are interrelated and exist alongside each other and are dependent on one another and these skills and how they intertwine is a big piece of this. And that's not a piece that you really get taught in school. You just get taught, go do a VB map, do enables, whatever, assess where they are and work through your checklist of, you know, targets to build up the lexicon, the words, whatever. And there's so much more to it than that. And I mean, yeah, other than that, working with difficult parents, I mean, we've seen that quite a few times. There's not a lot more to add there, I don't think. I mean, how would you guys have dealt with this? I want to know it's enough. But how would you have dealt with Ollie, the bro?
I would have called him three times so he'd answer. Because he knew it was urgent.
But what would you have said to him?
I mean,
I would have cut down on the, I mean, I wouldn't have even introduced the full PEX binder to start. I would have gone for a couple preferred items that we could use as a way to teach the give and take of the conversation for mans and build it up from there. I think that the
I asked you, what would you have said to him? I didn't ask you how you execute a PEX program.
I think, though, this is like a really good opportunity to set some examples for Darren, the RBT, of how do you identify when someone isn't doing their job? And how do you, you know what I mean, like work around that? Because, I mean, presumably he doesn't have a lot of interactions with any BCBAs. That's his
What would you have said to him? What would you have said to him then, man?
I mean, I guess I probably would have posed, I would have asked him why, what the logic behind it was. And in my usual roundabout way, try to guide him to making the right choice.
Maybe ask to see the data.
Thank you. I would have been like, what's the data look like? And then it would either be bad or it'd be like, what data? And it's like, all right, cool. This is nothing. Let's make this something. Because that's probably all Ollie was getting, if he's not just a mythical
weaponization
human
of data.
Paycheck is going to. What's that?
Weaponization of data.
Weaponization of data.
It's one of the best tools we have in our skill set.
I use that all the time. It's bad.
It is nice to redirect to it. It's like, yeah, I'm not trying to be that guy, but look at it.
It's behavior momentum too. It's like if I'm called in for a consult,
the dog
I'm asking
on the floor and you're rubbing his nose and his bad data. It's like, look at that.
Yeah.
Bad data.
But truly, it's like, hey, can you take baseline data for me? And if we don't have that, then what do you expect me to do? Anything and what procedures will you follow at all? Like it is the barrier to it's pay to play. So you have to have something to show me that either it's not improving already, or that you at least have a finger on the pulse and you're willing to track things and try things.
I mean, otherwise, I agree with you, but I'm going to take that as a cop-out answer because because we obviously the data was bad. She wasn't making any progress from the conversation. So presumably your boy Ollie was not interested or concerned with the data. He was on a hunch. So how do you deal with a person? So let me rephrase my question then to you guys. How would you deal with a person who was less concerned about what the data looked like and more concerned with the intervention that they put in place based on just like whatever theoretical conception they brought to the table and they're willing to defend it?
Well, one thing that we didn't end up really disclosing was the forced compliance component of the hand over hand model as it was occurring. So I would
force
refer back to that as, my red flag as to why I think we need to do better.
How was it forced compliance?
So, I mean, it was written in the script. It didn't really get to a point where we talked about it, but there was like active resistance from Tatiana as they were trying to prompt her, and she's pulling her hand away because she's got this book that she has no idea what it means. And so the book ended up
I'm glad
becoming
the
thing that
come
was
up in the thing. I would have been like, that would have triggered me then. At that point, I would have been like,
yeah.
Would you? I'm just gonna spitball here, Dimitri. But would you go into a conversation with that RBT and then like try to pick apart what concepts they're trying to leverage and are advocating for as to why they're doing what they're doing? And then would you just kind of like pull on those threads and just kind of like undermine them? Just kind of one at a time. I'm thinking like a Socratic method, asking questions back.
Yeah.
And then
Socratic
eventually getting to the point.
They're good for initial icebreakers in these kinds of situations. And they're good once you've already. So they're good to establish.
I used to get that a lot where people would ask me questions. Same guy would ask me a question. And I'd just like get to the point to where after 15 questions, you're like, I don't even know what I'm arguing for anymore. I don't know if I actually understand these terms anymore. So why don't you tell me what you would do in this situation, and then I'll go home and think about all this.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, that's also known as intellectual browbeating, so you got to be careful.
Definitely, definitely. But like, I think there's like, you can softly do that, or you can ask a ton of questions and
I'm pro Socratic method. Let's just start there. I'm pro Socratic method. I would actually been a little. I would only do that if they're resistant, because I mean, especially in what we do, people take that kind of questioning as a browbeating, even though technically, I mean, that's how you make lawyers and doctors. If anyone's wondering, it's Socratic methodology is how they're they're grilled in their rounds and in their open debate sessions. So, I mean, that's how you, it's how razor iron sharpens iron in that way. But I mean, like in terms of like, I would have just had a candid conversation with him. Honestly, I would have just been straight up. Cause he seemed like when you have someone who's really willing and they're not expressing resistance, there's no reason to make them feel bad about themselves or make them feel stupid for the things that they're saying. And there's no need to necessarily point out that they don't know what they're talking about. It's more like, hey, listen, I hear you. I'm going to be very honest with you. I think you have a general baseline definition of these things, but I think you're missing some of the applied aspects of this.
I think that's where I was trying to go with this too, is it's not, you're not in any way, you're basically having a conversation to the point where they come out questioning, like, do I know this stuff as well as I thought I did? You know, just to get them to critically think.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that, but I'm saying that I would not have done a Socratic approach necessarily in this kind of a case where it's like, because that a Socratic approach, Socratic questioning is about asking strategic questions that reduce a person's argument to the logical fallacies that it's based on. So it's designed to bring someone to expose the contradictions in their speech. You really only need to do that if the person you're talking to is unwilling to accept that they may be contradicting themselves in these kinds of, especially given the power dynamic that you have with someone like an RBT versus you as a BCBA. You're already coming in from a position of authority. So you would only need to deploy that technique as if you need to assert that authority and remind them where they belong in terms of like who is the authority in the situation versus who is not the authority and who's the performer. So I would have, that's what I mean by that. There, like with Ollie, so just answer with Ollie. Oh yeah, I would have had Ollie chasing his tail 37 different ways, had his brain melting out of his earlobes, and having him lead and questioning his identity and reality, to teach him a lesson for being so terrible to his clients, and also for having the audacity to not check up on what's going on and not caring about it, other than what how
is that. Him. Before or after he left you that voicemail?
After the voicemail would have been uglier. I would have probably been uglier. But yeah, that's how you do it. With a guy like Darren, you're just straight up like, hey, listen, man, this isn't working, right? You and I can agree this isn't working, right? It's not working. Okay. You and I can agree that there's a couple different skills here that we can be working on simultaneously, and there's nothing necessarily inhibiting us there, right? Absolutely. Okay, let's work on these additional skills. And I'll tell you what, you really want to learn how to do this stuff because I can tell you want to be good at this, right? You want to get good. GG, right? Get good. Yeah, okay. Let me show you the procedure so you can master this procedure and become an expert at the procedure itself. Let me show you what high-skilled execution of this looks like. And then that's where you can leverage kind of like someone's motivation and desire and ambition to be good rather than shaming them into complying.
Darren's character was actually set up to not side with you if he felt like he was getting a browbeating. So,
yeah, I had a nice little if then, and I felt like there was a small amount of compassion. So I jumped on board because, you know,
it literally says if he's being compassionate, go here. If he's not, go here.
I saw the writing, adventure, Dimitri.
I saw the writing on the wall. I was going to ask Dimitri to be my supervisor if this all had arrived.
No, Max. You lay these little minefields out because you know me so well, you think. It's so funny. I mean, let's go back. I mean, how did we do it with you guys?
Oh, I got a couple of browbeatings.
I mean, but you were a punk. You were a punk.
Dimitri, we would argue and then we would be on the same side and we'd be like, why are we shouting in the office right now?
Dave would argue.
You're saying the same thing, dude. I just don't understand.
Dave could never just say, okay. He had to literally fight with me in supervision on the same point.
I learned it from you.
Ridiculous. So funny.
If you are earning BACBCUs, your code word this week is scope of competence. Again, if you're earning BACBCUs, you will need the code word scope of competence. Just head over to our website. It's a real quick process. Again, that word is scope of competence. The views expressed during the explanatory fiction podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the official policy or position of any other agency, organization, employer, or company. Assumptions made in the analysis are not reflective of any position of any other entity other than the authors, and since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to revision, change, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity. This podcast is to educate and inform, provide discussion, and does not constitute professional advice. Remember again that the variables in this case were randomly generated, as well as the name and the episode imagery. Thank you, math. Thank you, science. And thank you, artificial intelligence. Rhino LLC is an approved continuing education provider that is ACE number hashtag OP-19-3037, and the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, also known as the BACB, a registered trademark, does not sponsor or approve or endorse Rhino LLC, the materials, information, or sessions identified herein. Thank you for listening.